All right, that seems close enough to 2 minutes, so let's get started. Thank you all for getting on here. This is my first meeting as the chairperson of this committee or commission, so just bear with me as we work through this. Might rely on some help for this, but I see the first thing is roll call. Do we need to actually go through that, or can you just notate who's here, who's absent?
I don't think we need to go through name by name. Like I said, I've marked off everybody I see. Oh, looks like Derek and Ruben just popped in. So Tim is the only one I don't see at the moment.
Okay. All right. So we have approval of the meeting minutes from February 2nd. I hope everyone's had a chance to review that. And if so, if I can get a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? All right. So carries. As my first meeting here as the chairperson, we got Joe here also as my vice chair. So thanks for being on here, Joe, and stepping up for that responsibility. I just kind of wanted to go over a little bit of kind of what our role is, get back to the basics a little bit of the Solid Waste Advisory Commission. And really, you know, the way our bylaws are, the way we are set up to operate is at a very high level. We're here to basically advise on things presented to us, not necessarily dictate or try and set any sort of policy to put towards the county. And really, we're operating at a very high level, and I know we have a lot of content. So just try and keep comments, stuff like that, to the subject at hand, and we'll get through this in a timely fashion. Amber, Joelle, if I missed anything, please jump in at any time. Also want to introduce our newest member, Gabe. So, Gabe, if you could just jump on, introduce yourself, and a little bit about your history and why you're excited to be part of SWAC.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Thank you. I appreciate it. So I've lived in Clark County most of my life. I've been in business for about 25 years. I've ran hauling districts and MRFs for several large companies in the past, one of them being Waste Connections and then the other one being WestRock. I'm currently the director of operations for a company called CTI, which runs recycling and sales of plastic containers, specifically IBC containers, and I run multiple plants on the West Coast. So the reason why I'm excited to be here is, one, I have a lot of knowledge that I want to give back with, you know, because it's kind of specialized knowledge, and two, I've lived in Clark County my entire life, so I want to help give back to what I care about. So that's kind of why I'm here.
All right. Fantastic. Thanks for joining us, Gabe. Glad to have you part of the group. And then we have a new interim solid waste operations program manager, Joelle. Joelle, if you could just jump on and introduce yourself real quick. Excited to have our
Hi.
Newest leader within the group.
I know a lot of you already, so nice to see you all again. I've been working with the solid waste program at Clark County for about 5 years. I'm excited to be in this new role, and yeah, that's about all I got.
All right, perfect. And then we also have Sarah Cairns, Interim Solid Waste Environmental Outreach Program Manager. Man, that's a mouthful. Is she on the call?
I am. Hi. It's good to
see you. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really excited to be in this role and with the group tonight. I've been working for Clark County Solid Waste since 2012, so I have a lot of experience with our environmental outreach programs.
Perfect, perfect. And of course, Amber is our program assistant. So really how our operation or our commission is set up, we are here just to, like I said, have that high-level advisory for things that are presented to us, and the county is here to really provide administrative support and so forth, not really to run the meetings. That's why we're here and why I'm in my position. So just keep moving on. One thing that was brought to my attention is our SWAC bylaws.
Hey, Jason?
Yeah.
I'm going to stop you there for a second. I think you may have missed somebody.
Oh, Dr. Melnick. Did I miss him?
Yep.
Well, that's really kind.
Sorry about that, Doctor.
I've been around a long time, so but I'm the public health director and health officer, but I'm really honored to be here with all of you. I'm not new.
Sorry for missing you there, Dr. Melnick.
It's okay. I'm pretty low key, so people miss me all the time.
All right. Perfect. So bylaws need to be approved by June 1st meeting. So that's really why we're planning on just having monthly meetings. We missed one, but monthly meetings through, I believe, April or May, but we need to extend a monthly meeting into June just because we are behind on the bylaws part. Those have been sent out by Amber, so please take time to review those, make any notes or have any questions or anything like that. We will go more in depth in that on our May meeting. So that way we can be ready for a final vote in June. Moving along. So the Clark County website now has a public comment forum. It was just launched. It's something, you know, if you run into people in the community or if you personally have specific side projects, interests, passions, or anything like that, that is the best way to get that in front of the actual policy decision makers. Those are read and reviewed and so forth. So please definitely utilize that. You can do it either anonymously or attach your name to it. Anything I missed? All right, moving right along. Education outreach, Tina and Sarah. Feel free to jump in.
All right, so I'm just gonna share my screen really quickly here. As just mentioned, I am the interim environmental outreach manager, and I'm here to chat with you about chapter 2 of our solid waste management plan draft, the education and outreach chapter. And I presented to this group last November, so I'm just going to do a very quick kind of recap of mentioning our 4 key outreach programs that we use to get the word out in the community about all of our behavior change, providing information to the public around toxics reduction and green cleaning, and all of our visits to schools and businesses. So, and, you know, just to also recap quickly, just a few examples of some of the channels that we use to communicate with the public, advertising in the Columbian. Each of these programs has a website. We also have monthly newsletters, as well as hosting workshops, events, and in-person demonstrations. So for the recommendations in the plan, the keys that I just want to quickly touch on, and you all hopefully have read through and saw the draft chapter provided to you, that we really want to focus our efforts to continue to offer information to the public through these outreach programs and continue to work towards behavior change in the community. We want to take a closer look and conduct some outreach that focuses on our newer programs, for example, the satellite battery collection and meds take back, and then also incorporate any learnings that we find in our equity and environmental justice plan. And with that, I am going to stop sharing my screen and pass the mic over to Tina to just touch on the crop.
Good evening, Commission. My name is Tina Kendall. Sorry, I'm used to having my screens on the opposite, so I feel like my eyes are getting a little combobulated here. But I will be talking about the second half of Chapter 2, which is the Contamination, Recycling, and Outreach Plan. So I won't be reading off everything on the slides, but just as a refresher, the purpose of the crop is to reduce contamination found in single family, multifamily, Dropbox, and commercial recycling programs. A simple version of this crop has been amended into the 2015 Solid Waste Management Plan, in which the 10 actions listed there are noted, so you'll see them again in the recommendations following. But for this master plan update, we have customized the crop to include the current state of recycling programs, ongoing strategies, needs and opportunities, and recommendations for the next 5 years. So I'll paraphrase quickly that we're publicizing top contaminants to residents, single family and multifamily through various outlets, processing recycling from the city of Vancouver and other areas of the county to analyze what is found in the materials, what is found in the materials that are sorted out as contamination, conduct a waste characterization study of all the materials collected. Let's see here. Deciding on which target audience to prioritize among single family, multifamily, et cetera. Assess recycling signage for clarity and consistency at transfer stations and reviewing new markets and determine if new items need to be added to the accepted list of recyclables. And then the last two, being able to spread our recycling messaging to other populations where English may not be their first language, and providing contamination outreach about textiles and other flexible items that can easily get caught in recycling machinery. So thanks for following through with me as I flew through those. But, we did get feedback on chapter two, the entire chapter from Kyle, and next we will open up the floor for questions and comments, and then next we hope to move into the motion to approve.
If anyone has any questions, comments, or anything like that, please jump in. Otherwise, I will move to making the motion to approve. Any comments?
Hi, this is Kim.
Hey, Kim.
Hey. I just had a general question, not specifically about this chapter, but could you remind me the timeline for ecology's approval, when this will be before other councils, county councils, our city council, other cities?
At the moment, a draft needs to be sent to Ecology by the end of June. At this point, that is just a draft. So we are, Joelle, please stop me here if I'm missing something or forgetting something. We're trying to get everything set in front of all you fine people and approved, and then send that to Ecology for their review of the draft, and then receiving any comment back from them, we will be putting it before council for their approval. Joelle, is that right?
The county council?
Yes.
And when would other cities see it? Their councils?
We are kind of negotiating what that next step of the timeline looks like. And Laura, you can speak to Ecology's timeline. I think we had like 145 days or something to get a response from you back before with our draft. So we are absolutely going to be speaking with council, I would say, over the summer and just have discussions. We have our public comment button that's on the website now. We're going to be making sure that we're shopping that out. The drafts for all of these chapters are available now on the website. So we'll have a more robust timeline as we get a little bit closer in these next few months. But right now, this has been our priority, is to get the drafts finished and to get that initial pre-draft to Laura by June 30th, which is our deadline, and is written in our current LaSWFA grant.
Yeah, so just quickly, there's a a review period that's informal. And that's kind of what I'm, why I'm participating in these meetings and looking at the drafts now. And then the part that has the days, number of days associated for a response, that's called a preliminary review. And that's a more formal, that's when we kick off the formal stuff. So that's why we do the informal stuff now, working and negotiating, navigating, updating and looking at what your input is and all of that. And then after that, we hit that preliminary review, and that's the more formal process. That's when hopefully this informal stuff will have polished off all the rough edges. So we'll go quickly through the preliminary and then the final review stages after that. As far as actual timeline, timing, and where the cities and other stakeholders are engaged, that's something that these guys will answer.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. Yeah, because we have our climate action framework and we're currently going through our comp plan and other significant systemic, you know, plans. And I just wanted to check in to make sure that city that we had it. I would like, you know, city to have the time to be able to go through it and make sure that we're all kind of on the same page and in alignment on things with what the city is doing as partners in this bigger plan. But I have no comments on this specific chapter, but thanks. I took some notes down.
John, if I could ask Sarah a question, please. Sarah, regarding this outreach, I've seen it in a couple of different levels and want to congratulate the outreach that's going on. I've seen a church community just turn to in a short period of time. But where I have a question specifically is regarding the current level of cooperation or integration of the message through our elementary and secondary school system in Clark County.
Thank you so much for asking that, because I have an opportunity to brag about one of our other outreach programs. So the Green Schools program is very active in all public and private schools in Clark County. We partner with EarthGen, which is a statewide green school certification program, so that green teams at individual schools can achieve different certification levels based on their engagement. We also offer cafeteria support for diverting food scraps from the landfill and teaching students how to recycle in their cafeteria on a daily basis, and also offer classroom presentations to support connecting with science curriculum for, you know, worm bins is one of the lessons that's offered to the younger students. And then we also partner with Waste Connections educators to do all of the school support. So they are in classrooms. The county staff, as well as Waste Connections educators, are in schools on a regular basis, doing really cool work, I think, to kind of to support student growth and leadership development, and also to take on environmental projects and problem solve, and offering that on-site operational support to cafeteria staff, teachers, and administrators for these programs. One of the really cool newer portions of that on-site work is around something called a share table. So rather than just composting certain pre-selected items that students don't eat during their lunch period, they're able to set those items aside on a share table so that another student might be able to grab an extra milk, for example. So it's preventing waste and teaching students about those types of concepts.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? All right, I'd like to bring this to a formal vote. Do I have anyone to make a motion to approve?
I'll motion to approve.
I'll second.
Perfect. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Carries. Moving on to organics management, Pete, the floor is yours.
Great. Good evening, esteemed SWAC members. Thank you for your volunteer hours and welcome work colleagues here on a rainy, wet day. I'm going to share my screen as well. We're going to talk about organics. We are really lucky to have Laura Busby from Ecology joining us and being party to a lot of our SWAC meetings. So, Laura, if there are some moments you want to jump in, please feel free to do so, especially as we talk about some of the incredible law changes that have occurred here really recently. So the law was passed called HB 1799. It's kind of been formalized as the Washington Organics Management Law. There is a lot to that. I prefaced our Chapter 4 organics management with a large table that you can find in the draft that Amber sent out. It's too much to go through in this short amount of time. So again, I'm going to focus on our recommendations. There is so much work around this field, though, that I've got about 12 or 16 recommendations. We'll count them off as we go. We'll know how many there are at the end. What I'd like to do is just go through each recommendation and see if there's comments. If not, we'll move to the next one rather than rattling off 16 and expecting you to remember them all. So I'm going to share my screen here. Let me know if we're running out of time and we need to speed along. I'm happy to do that. Okay. Get my controls out of here. So one of the big things about this organics management law is they want us to cut our food waste and organics waste significantly by 2030. So really the benchmark we're looking at is organic waste going to the landfill by a whopping 75% by 2030. We're already in April 2023. So we're looking at some major work being done. And as part of that piece of the waste stream, food waste is a large component of that. So we're looking at trying to cut our food waste through both getting more food to those who need it to eat as donations and rescue, and then also recovery and diversion and prevention by in half. So basically cutting that. And if you think about our food and organics slice of the waste pizza pie, we're at, you know, 20 to 25% of what people are putting in their trash, their dumpsters, their drop boxes turns out to be organic material. So it really is an area that we need to address. Some of it's low hanging fruit, some of it's harder to get to. And again, this falls really on all staff, both in our outreach and operations section. So I just am the point person here. So some of these will be handled through our Green Neighbors and our education side of things. That's to conduct outreach campaigns to prevent food waste. Ecology is working on messaging as well. We've also tapped into some of the things going on in Oregon with DEQ and Metro. And so this is an ongoing piece, pretty straightforward. Just chime in quickly. Any questions on this one? I'll give just a few seconds. Okay, we're gonna move along, but feel free to interrupt me anytime if I go too fast.
Okay, Pete, I have a quick question. Yes. You're shooting on this screen in the lower right side where you talk about rescuing 250 tons of edible. At the last meeting where this was discussed, at that time there was no collaboration expressed between what you're doing here and the local food bank. And so I'm asking at this point in time or in anticipating in the future, do you anticipate the solution to this problem, any more closer coordination with the Vancouver Food Bank?
Yes. The quick answer is yes. And you got two recommendations ahead of me. So let me speed along and then we'll get to that one. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. Our next one, which Sarah touched on just a little bit, is reducing this food waste at the schools. She talked about our share tables. getting folks to put the right menu order items out so folks actually eat their food. The state has a lot of programs they're trying to do, trying to get people to have recess first and then eat their lunch so they don't throw it all away so they can get outside. We got a lot of different things going on at the school level. In fact, Ecology as a whole Use Food Well plan that outlines many, many different things happening, both local, state, and federal to get things going here. So we want to rescue 50 tons, again, to feed folks and then divert another 250 tons of waste. And then that third one, which Mike, you mentioned, is really more about reaching out to our business community. We do have a new green business person on the call. Welcome, Selena. And so that's going to be providing technical assistance, waste audits, incentives, first of all, to get folks to see all the food that's going in the trash. Really, business savings, the most significant savings a business can have is in not purchasing food to begin with that's not going to get eaten. And so there are savings by keeping it out of the trash can, but I believe it's a factor of 10. So, for instance, businesses will do an all-you-can-eat brunch and then have a bunch of food waste that gets thrown in the trash that they spent great expense at to fill up those platters. If you can just either do away with the all-you-can-eat buffet or do better purchasing practices, you don't have to buy that food to begin with. So there's a number of things going on here. And, yes, we will be partnering. This is going to be a major effort. We kind of pushed this out some years as well. So hopefully that answers you, Mike, and we can certainly get back.
Thank you.
Okay, our second of four slides is to research what, if anything, commercial businesses are doing to donate and divert food waste. And so really this is getting to a little bit of what you were discussing with your question. We need to identify those barriers. You know, there's Good Samaritan laws. They don't really apply to business, unfortunately. They do apply to people that donate in good faith. And so, you know, businesses don't want extra liability on them. They're trying to change that at a federal level. That hasn't happened yet. So part of this is an earlier target date. In fact, this was by September 2023, but I was going through these slides. I pushed it back a year just because we have a new hire and we had some lost time there. This will be a big report that can come back to SWAC, go to Ecology, and really start to pave the way on how we're going to get that food recovered and rescued.
We seem to have lost audio.
Okay. Am I back?
I can hear him.
Okay. I may have to, let me just mute my visual here.
Just me.
Pete, that might be an Amber issue.
I think it's just an Amber issue. Is it an Amber issue?
Yes.
Okay. Did my screen get small?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. Is it back?
Yes.
Okay. Well, just let me know, and I can try to – the old internet issues. Okay. So our next one, reduce food waste.
Hey, Pete, can I hold you up real quick?
Yes, of course.
I see, Kim, I see your hands raised. Do you have a question for Pete?
Yeah, just a quick, could you forward me the Good Samaritan laws? That's news to me that businesses aren't part of that.
Yeah, Laura, would you mind jumping in? This is discussed in the Use Food Well plan. Is that something you have any familiarity with? If not, I can follow up with Kim.
I can find it for you and get it to you. I'm sure it's probably listed on the state legislative page, but I'm happy, Kim, to find that and get it to you.
That'd be awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, there is a discrepancy on who that applies to. Yes. So they're working on that. Okay. So, reduce food waste at restaurants. We talked about this, really just trying to get them better menu planning, better sizing of their portions. There are some actual software programs with scales that we can employ so folks can actually start to look at their waste and their ordering practices and do better inventory and planning. This is ongoing, again, with our green business program. And then, moving right along, so I know we're in a quick time frame, conduct outreach and education related to the value of compost. curbside organics, recycling collection, to prevent food waste, compost, increase food donations. This is just ongoing work, but ecology, the reason I've got that target date per ecology is there are some benchmarks that kick in specific to businesses that if you're of a certain size, the law currently states you're required to begin composting and providing that. There's interpretation. I don't know, Laura, if you've got any updates on that. The first one kicks in 2024. I believe it's for any business that is a 4-cubic-yard container or more will now be required to offer composting as part of their business practice, and then that ramps up over the next 3 years. Any questions? Move on to the next one.
This is Ruben. I had a question going back.
Yes.
Regarding the reducing food waste from restaurants. I've got a lot of experience working in restaurants and corporate and local. And a lot of the corporate chains, you know, actually have pretty regimented and prescribed means of setting PARs and trying to minimize food costs. There's always room for improvement, of course, with portion controlling and whatnot. But the independent or local restaurants, you know, usually aren't kind of held to corporate mandates. With that outreach, the strategy is it to just look at all restaurants, or is there, a focus where the education would be directed to based on, you know, where we think it would be most received and effective?
That is an excellent question.
I can speak to that, Pete, if you want.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, so I will say that our intentions with Green Business Program are to really focus on finding decision makers. So to your point, our initial proactive outreach is definitely towards locally owned food service establishments. And Pete had mentioned this previously, but the program and this outreach work has been on hold for the past year because we haven't had staffing available. So moving forward, that is a really good point and very well taken around the difference between the decision-making structures between, you know, corporate and larger chains versus our local establishments.
Wonderful.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that comment. Okay, we're going to move. Sorry, I got a little trigger happy here. This is a third of four. Expand food waste collection at multifamily properties. So right now, multifamilies, through the way they're set up, are required to at least pay for recycling service for all their units. And Derek, I see you got a hand up. Not sure if that was on multifamily. Nope. And so they're not required, and the law doesn't require them either. So we're just going to try to chip away at this one. It's not easy to work with multifamily because folks are coming and going a little quicker than single family, and it's harder to maintain contaminant-free materials. So we really need to have a champion there. But it is on our list, and we definitely want to take that seriously. We've had some outreach from a few folks, so hopefully we can get some momentum there. This next one is a little bit of a wild card. Kind of depends on some grant funding, but there is a business here in Washington State. I believe it's Cashmere, Washington. There's another farm that has recently set up shop in Oregon, and they are using bioconversion. So they're basically taking larvae, whether they're black soldier fly larvae or mealworms. These are voracious eaters when they are in their larval stage, and they're also a protein source that can be dried and sold to pet owners and other type of animal feed. Hopefully we never have Armageddon where we need to eat these things ourselves. But that would be an option too. So this would be a bioconversion facility. We've got a very small scale operation in Camas, called Northwest Red Worms, but they're doing black soldier fly and mealworms. Again, we would need to, really get a team formulated and get this going. That's why it's kind of pushed out pretty far, but could be exciting stuff. Localized, and things that we could ramp up and scale up. Any questions on that one? Because that's kind of a big one. That could be big. Okay. Provide technical assistance, funding, equipment. We've got a program that we've recently started working with churches. So not everyone in Clark County has access currently to put their food in a cart. Not everyone has a cart. Because it's subscription based. So you pay if you want the service. And then folks that do have those carts, not every city or the county can put food in with the yard debris. So we're trying to provide other outlets, other community areas, drop points where folks can bring that food only. And so we've successfully set up 4 churches. We're working with others as well. We're looking at expanding that into the school. And really anywhere where we can get a drop point, whether it's a farmer's market, government offices, where we can get the quality product. And our final slide, provide education funding equipment for backyard composting efforts. This is something that makes it into all of our plans, really just trying to hit people in their own backyard. Make sure they do it properly, no rats, no smells. We do a lot of education, training, workshops. Through our compost and recycle program. If you haven't signed up, we got some new workshop series coming on starting next week. We've got 40 folks already signed up for our backyard composting. Issue an RFP. Again, as I spoke, not all of the green carts can include food. Currently, it's just City of Vancouver and the City of Ridgefield. So we're looking at making sure that everyone who's got a green cart can put food in it. Really, it's a bottlenecking issue at our facilities. So that leads into our final one, where we expand our local food waste processing infrastructure, including more capacity and efficiency at existing facilities. So that takes us through, and I'm going to stop my share and see if there's any questions.
I'll just jump in and say that I threw a couple of links in the chat, one of them for business organics management, the focus sheet for that explains the, cubic yards and the years. And then a second one on the Good Samaritan Food Donation Act, RCW 6980031. So there's a link in there to that.
I have a couple questions, Pete. And do you know, or you guys, have you talked about how you will measure the organic disposal amounts, to establish whether or not a customer is an 8-yard or not? I mean, because so much material is commingled in with the garbage, how do you think we will go about establishing who's in and who's out in year one?
Yes, and I'm glad Laura's here because it's an ecology. they get to interpret that law. So I don't know, Laura, do you have any words of wisdom you can share with Derek on that? Cause that's something
I can just use my thumb, I guess, too.
Derek, can you repeat your question? I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, I mean, how do we establish who generates 8 yards of organics? And, I'm thinking of multifamily entities. I'm thinking about, businesses that are high volume businesses. How do you establish that they generate over 8 yards? Do you have to do a waste audit of facilities? What's that process look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm not sure, I don't have an answer, but I am sure it's something that has been asked of our food team, but I will make note of that and get back to you on what the answer is, if they have one at this point in time, of how they plan on it. I think on some level, some of this is, up to the business to be managing, you know, determining their waste and managing it. But I'm not sure, you know, the exact details. So
I just want to make sure I have enough containers and carts ready for all Clark County. I'm a little worried about that. The other question I have is, Pete, did you say early on how much the estimation is of the organic waste in the general municipal solid waste flow?
I did it on a more general basis. We've got the actual tons in the chapter that we sent out, and it's based on our overall tons disposed and landfilled here in Clark County, and then the percentages from a waste characterization study that Washington State did, their composition study. And so it's over 20,000 tons of, I know, just vegetative food waste is going in the trash.
Here in Clark County. Do you remember ballpark what the percentage of the waste is? I'm just thinking like...
The ballpark percentage, again, for food only is probably around 20%.
And are we talking about when they say organic waste, we're not talking about just food only, though. We're talking about the entirety of organics.
And organics, it gets a little tricky because then we're adding, obviously, yard debris, but then they have wood. Wood is... It would just be clean dimensional wood. It's harder to break out. They've got animal waste, which is really, we can't compost, or manures. And a lot of that is animal waste. So I'm not quite sure if we can pinpoint that data tracking this time. I know, and Laura will back me up on this one. The development of this new food organization, I can't remember what it's called, Ad Ecology, they're really tasked with diving into these metrics.
The food center.
Thank you. So more to come, Derek.
Okay. Hey, Pete, this is Joe. Not meaning to put you on the spot, but one of the things that seems to concern me about this is what are we using as a baseline? And I guess let's put it this way. Today it's 2023. This law comes into effect in 2030. The problem is, and maybe this is a question. Derek's talking to somebody off camera. I was looking at you, Derek. Do we have a solid count on exactly how much of this organic material is currently, is currently in the garbage? And then I guess the question I'm asking is, how are they figuring this 75% reduction? I'm taking a guess that what it comes down to is it's current organic disposal per capita, if you will. And then, of course, and here's where I'm going with this is they're getting ready to work on the comp plan, and they're expecting the county's going to grow some god awful amount of residents between now and 2030. So I guess I'm just curious as to, what kind of, how we are setting our baseline versus what they're looking for in 2030.
Yeah, and this is a great follow-up question. And unfortunately, I'm not going to have an answer for you right now.
Well, gosh darn it, Pete. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry.
But this food center will be working on that. But the other piece really, Joe, to your point, is we know we got to get tons on the ground. So that's when we get a cart picked up, we just set up a church. They're doing 4 carts a week. Mm-hmm. We know those carts are, 85 pounds. So we know that we're getting tons kept out of the landfill. And that's really our goal, carts and dumpsters on the ground, both residential, business, and multifamily.
Yeah, and so that was kind of what I was asking that question is, back in the napkin math, you're talking about 500,000 or 400,000 tons a year, annual tons of MSW in Clark County. And, if 20% of that is organics, then you're at 80,000 tons of material, and you want to capture 75% of that, you're at 60,000 tons of material. So then, but you got to look at how the math comes out. Also talking about existing residential programs, that already are capturing a lot of material. There's other means of doing that, not to mention the green waste that flows through a lot of these facilities as well in the community. So there may be a lot of additional numbers that are involved in there, but you get into some pretty big tonnages pretty quickly, in the program, and managing that is a challenge.
Right. and I could, okay, please understand, this is not an accusation to anyone. It's just a plain statement that I can see, we could make just about anything look right if we start with the right wrong numbers. If my dad has a famous phrase, figures don't lie, but liars can figure. And if we start with the wrong baseline, well, shoot, we can make that happen really easy. I think this is a great program. I think the intention is perfect. As a farmer, I have to say, the concept of creating, I don't want to directly go to compost, but I got to tell you, I know Pete loves compost. I know Pete loves worms, and I do too. I'd love to see us at least consider, let's put it that way, putting a compost facility in Clark County. With that said, Pete, I apologize. This may not be the time to mention it, but I'd throw out there, if you know Eric Harrison with Parks Department, Eric is the former operations manager for the Portland compost facility. I don't know where at in Portland. I just know his City of Portland compost facility. And he would be someone to pull in. I know he told me at least one time about all of the good and or bad that happened at that facility. And it'd be great to pull him in and say, hey, tell us what we should and should not do from all of your, from all of the good and bad stuff that happened over in Portland, so that we don't make the same mistakes,
And I would strongly vote for, just from the history in Clark County, it is incredibly difficult to site a organics facility in Clark County. Mm-hmm. That is, provides a reasonably priced service, I would say. Okay. I think our partners in Dirt Hugger and out of county have set up a really good system. And so, I would look to other alternatives. I'm not saying no on Clark County. I just think it presents a lot of challenges. So.
Okay.
All right. Well, I appreciate all the questions, comments, and so forth. I know on this one, we're seeking a formal vote of approval from what was presented. So if I can get a motion to approve.
I'd move.
I'll second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It carries. All right. Let's move right along in the sake of time. So moving on to Chapter 5, Construction and Demolition, Jessica.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jessica. I'm an operations specialist on the solid waste team, and I'm going to talk about Chapter 5 organics, like you said, or construction demolition, while you guys got the organics word stuck in my head. So if I were to summarize construction waste, it would be bulky lumber, drywall, siding, roofing material, and then also possibility for contamination with hazardous materials like asbestos, lead, PCB. So it's quite a complicated material stream. Goes into quite a lot of detail in the chapter, but we don't have a lot of options for diverting this type of material. And it makes up quite a big portion of our landfill waste. The 2020-2021 waste study from the state of Washington found it was 24% construction and demolition waste by weight in going to the landfill. And a lot of that is from commercial industry. And it's a material stream that we don't have a lot of infrastructure to recycle. There aren't many recycling markets for that type of material. That brings us to our first recommendation is really we need to research the best waste management solutions for this, because right now it's a bit of an unknown that there are other areas taking action with policy and bringing in different recycling facilities. And we really want to spend time to research the entire span to look into infrastructure solutions, reuse, reduction incentives, work to align with local climate actions, climate goals like the city of Vancouver is doing. There's some information about construction waste in that framework that they've put out. So first goal, first action recommendation in the chapter is to research C&D waste management and recommend some actions. And we've given ourselves some time for that, 2028, because we want to do it well. We want to do it, you know, in more time than we had to do this chapter in the solid waste management plan, that it just, it's a big material stream, and we want to get it right when we do make action to reduce that material stream. The second recommendation of the chapter, these are the only two recommendations. We want to publish a new recycling toolkit that identifies the recycling options for C&D waste that currently exist in the area. And that will be a valuable tool to give out to contractors, because there are some recyclers that exist, but most of them are hard to find unless you know who to call. They have, you know, bad internet or bad websites. You got to know exactly who to call. So for us to consolidate all that information for where to bring rubble, bricks, siding, roofing, all the above, drywall, they exist, but we have to consolidate all that into a toolkit that we can publish and distribute to contractors and put it online for anybody to access. And those are the only two. Hopefully that's quick. I can open it up for questions now. We did have one comment from Kyle, who's not here, that it's about the timeline, wanting more aggressive timeline than proposed, but understanding that we need more time, that this is more realistic to have a goal for putting recommendations into the next solid waste management plan update. Okay, now I can see your faces again, so feel free to shout out any questions.
I'm glad to see that you're going to be putting the work into creating, you know, researching and properly, you know, doing it right. I guess I would just like to comment ahead of that I would hope that some of those management and recommended actions would be things alongside mandating that, you know, construction or demolition is done with recycling. And it's kind of a chicken and egg, right? Like if recyclers know that something like that's coming on the pipeline, then there's the demand. And so they kind of need to go alongside each other. So working with recyclers and potentially developing those markets alongside of something like that would, there's the demand by creating the mandate.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's kind of what King County did, and it'll be nice to have more time to look into exactly how they manage those contracts and, you know, what data they're seeing, how much diversion they're getting. Yeah, that's definitely something we'll include in the study.
Jessica, if I may, along that line, since we're going to be trying to attract this business and this skill set into Clark County, has the Columbia River Economic Development Council participated in any way in interest in trying to help us find targeted businesses like this?
No. And I don't think we're at that point to start, you know, bringing in the recyclers or the industry, that we want to take the time to really know what's out there. And that'll be a good one to look into and talk to.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? All right, this one's also seeking a formal vote of approval, as it is. Knowing that we have some timelines out there, I know Kyle would love to see an accelerated timeline on that, but understanding that we do need to do this right, right off the bat, and understanding the staff constraints, and they feel this is a reasonable timeline. So with that, can I get a motion to approve as it is?
Quick question, sorry. Would using a consultant or something, I know some of these mention consultants on other chapters, would that potentially be an option to accelerate the timeline?
Yes, that hasn't been really discussed yet, but I did put that into the chapter that it could be internal staff or hiring a consultant, which is what a lot of other areas do to find, you know, more specialized knowledge in there. So yeah, there's benefits and opposite word for benefits, pluses and minuses for going out with a consultant. But we'll definitely see what's out there.
And Jessica, is that what you meant by hiring a contractor as hiring a consultant? Because I kind of read that.
Oh, yeah.
I read that as an actual contractor who knows the ins and outs of the
architect. You're right. Yeah, when we write RFPs, it's the contractor, the person we're contracting with, which in this case would be a consultant. So, yeah, that's definitely a thing I should distinct put in there.
Perfectly fine. Perfectly fine. Just deeply involved in the construction business.
Yeah, like, definitely.
That's an interesting tactic, but I can see how that would work.
Yeah.
All right, let's bring this to a vote. Can I get a motion to approve?
So moved.
Thanks, Joe.
Seconded.
Thank you, Gabe. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Carries. All right, let's move on to technical memorandum. Mike Davis.
Hello, good evening. So tonight we've got Doug Drennan in the meeting, and we're going to go over what we went over back in February, the same presentation. And some folks probably didn't see that. And then we're going to talk about the technical memorandum as well as the, chapter, the ownership chapter from the regional system study. And tonight we're not asking for a formal vote, but we will kind of discuss staff's recommendations and what is expected at the next meeting for a vote. So Amber or Doug, are one of you going to put up the slides?
I can go ahead and do that. Give me just a moment.
You got them, Amber? Oh, okay. To the committee members, most of you know me. Some of you may be new, but I'm Doug Drennan. I'm part of the JR May consulting team that's been working with the county on updating or completing the solid waste system study. So today, we presented this a couple months ago. And if you recall, there's really two parts to it. In the phase one of the project, which was completed in September 21, we did a review of ownership options. That was called task 7. And then subsequent to that, in phase two, we completed what Mike referred to as the technical memorandum. What's different from today than in the past, I think you have been provided a draft copy of both those documents. I don't think those were in your hands before we made this presentation. So the purpose of today is we're going to go through and just overview that study with the idea that, or expectation that perhaps you've read that or had time to read it and may have questions, or if not, raise questions just from the last time we presented it. So there's no new slides here other than to kind of walk through what was in those documents and then give you the opportunity to comment. So proceed to the next slide. So again, we'll cover briefly the background of what's in the Task 7 report, the evaluation of ownerships. We're not going to go through the detail. The document, the Task 7 document, goes through a total evaluation of those options, and then we'll discuss the public ownership options as outlined in the technical memorandum, and then get any questions on the governance options that have been suggested. Okay, move forward. So a background again, the transfer station, and I think you can put these on the full, it's on the, you can put this on the full program. There's a, yeah. Right now it's on the slideshow edit version, but you might put these, Amber, on the, so the whole slideshow. But anyhow, so the transfer stations were built back in 92. The agreement with Columbia Resource was to build the three transfer stations. And then as part of that agreement, there was the potential to purchase the facilities, particularly after they've been fully amortized. You want to move to the next one? Okay, and in 2006, there was the building of the third transfer station, the Washougal Station, in which the city of Washougal does have the option, first right of refusal, to purchase that facility. And then the 2019 regional solid waste system study that we conducted was to first do a full evaluation of the system as well as evaluate the ownership options. So move forward. So in that phase one study, which is called Task 7, Evaluation of Ownerships, it was our objective to take a look at, an objective look at what are the options for ownerships and operations, what's typically used in the solid waste industry. So current system is, it is privately owned and privately operated under a contract. The second option would be public ownership and private operation. Another option is public ownerships with limited operation of, say, scale houses or perhaps other services. And finally, a full public ownership and operation. Now, as outlined in the Task 7 report, there's no perfect solution to this. Many systems operate under any of these four different options, or what I call institutional arrangements. And you'll find them, they vary from community to community. So it's really a case of what fits your community and what meets your needs. And so go to the next slide. So in that report, we took a look at evaluating the factors that are associated with each of those institutional arrangements. And that includes, how do you make capital improvements and the funding for those capital improvements under those different scenarios? What is the span of control that that is offered under that, under each option? And span of control, again, I like to remind people that local governments are required, are they're the responsible party for managing solid waste as handed down by the federal government and the state government. So it's up to local governments to decide what level of control is and risk is necessary to meet the best needs for their community. So anyhow, that's the variable. Management experience, that is, what is the experience to operate a utility like this? And does a community want to take on that responsibility or contract that responsibility out? Go back out, go to the next slide. Ownership risk, what are the risks in owning these facilities and what is acceptable to that community? Contracting the services, you know, what services do you want to delegate out? You know, and that comes back to what level of control the community wants in accomplishing and providing the services to its constituents. And then there's regulatory impacts or options of how you want to operate or structure the utility for those best services. So these factors were evaluated, given the advantages and disadvantages of each. Move forward. And so we did that. We put in some matrix. This is all in that test 7 report. And then we present an analysis to contrast the options for meeting the challenges associated with managing solid waste for Clark County. Now, in the preparation of this report, there has been lots of discussions with some jurisdictions, some members of the community. I can't speak to all the discussions that went on, but if you move to the next task, there were certain factors that were handed out or arrived at that seemed to provide some direction of what to consider in this phase one report. But there were no specific recommendations in that report. So I encourage the SWAC members to read that test 7 report. If there's questions on it, anything that you feel needs some answers or more information, let us know. So move on to the next one. So the result of that phase one came about with some what we call guiding principles. In other words, what is important to the county and the region? And one is the idea that solid waste is a shared service here. All the waste is collected into the county facilities and delivered to one point for disposal. So a regional agency that includes the incorporated cities to participate is attractive. The entity would be something that would be independent. That is, it's not governed by the county or one city. A governing board should be appointed, but not duly elected. That differentiates, say, for instance, how your regional water system, wastewater system is, which is a separate municipal entity with separate elected board. So that's not what was desired. The board would have the full authority to set rates and fees and then basically operate like an enterprise fund within a jurisdiction, a separate utility. And it would be independent of the county and from the participating city. In other words, separate entity. These were, like I said, guiding principles. Next slide. So what we did in this phase two report is taking those, we looked at the Oregon Revised Code of Washington and said, you know, what does the state offer in terms of their code for conducting these kind of regional activities? And so there were four that are provided: interlocal cooperation agreement, a joint municipal utility services group, metropolitan municipal cooperation, and a disposal district. Now, each of these have different responsibilities and authorities, and again, that's all discussed in the technical memorandum. Go to the next slide. So the one institutional arrangement that best fits those criteria was the Joint Municipality Utility Services Group. And if you're familiar with the Discovery Clean Water Alliance, that operates very similar. It's a separate entity with a board from the members from the appointed from, these are elected members from Battleground, Ridgefield, and the unincorporated county, as well as the that county wastewater regional system, because they are a separate jurisdiction. They are also the operating authority or contractor for the wastewater treatment systems serving the Battleground Ridgefield area. It operates totally as an independent utility with an enterprise fund. They can issue revenue bonds, set the rates, and direct and oversee operations on an annual basis. They'll pass a budget, and again, the rate setting is set up by those by that entity. But the facilities are totally owned by the alliance, and they can either contract that operation out, or if they elected to, they could hire their own staff. At this point, they do contract out. So again, that's similar to what you might consider for solid waste, is the county or the Jamis owning the facilities, but contracting them out. And like I said, they have full authority to accumulate revenue bonds and to make capital improvements. Next slide. So there were some preliminary recommendations, and I state these as preliminary because we haven't had a lot of outside input at this time. But the JMOS is a organization or institutional framework for solid waste that fits that criteria and the issues listed. The next steps, if the desire was to proceed, would to be to prepare a business plan that presents all the authorities, missions, responsibilities, staffing, and financing. Some of that is contained, at least a bare bones is in the is in that technical memorandum. And then once a business plan is prepared, you would draft a memorandum of understanding in agreement with the jurisdictions and begin the process of establishing that organization. So that's the outline, and that's where we are today. I guess I hope that you've had some time to read those documents. I know you're all busy. There's a lot of information there, but I open it up to the committee for questions.
Is this the document that Amber sent us in February?
Okay. I believe so. I'm not sure the official date when they sent it out.
I believe it is.
So, Kim, we sent you the whole chapter when it became available, as well as the technical memorandum, and I believe that was more recent. I think we sent you this slide deck right after the meeting, or in March. Amber, do you recall?
I do not recall whether or not we sent the slide deck, but we sent the technical memorandum on March 13th or 15th, I believe it was.
Okay. Then that answers yes, Kim.
I'd like to ask a couple of questions here, if I may, but I'd like to proceed with a statement that one of the things of the past year in being associated with the SWAC is I've learned to respect and appreciate the expertise of Waste Connections and how they do business. The one thing that I have discovered, and maybe this is the aspect or the part of the presentation that is being left out of those four options that you present, including the Jamis, was in the material that Amber sent out, the city of Tacoma was referred to a number of times. I took the liberty to call the solid waste group at the city of Tacoma to kind of ask them how that was working. And so without getting into all the detail, I'll just say what I walked away from that conversation with was the expertise represented by Waste Connections is phenomenal. The technical issues that can come up in the process of these mechanics are something they deal with, if not locally, at least on their international business. And they've got solutions within their organization that they can refer to. Having said that, using the battleground plumbing water system as an example, I was trying to think of how I could compare it for the purpose of my comments here, and it just came to me listening to you. Let's imagine for a second that for some reason, battleground and that particular plumbing system discovered that there was actually particulates of gold in the water system. And that the center that was cleaning it was able to extract that gold. Okay, how would that impact the operation? Well, that's what we have with our solid waste and with the services the Waste Connections is providing. And what I would ask, without getting into too much detail, is that in the four configurations of potential ownership and operations, nowhere in the information provided to us were any of the financials, positives and negatives associated with each decision outlined. So I would ask, especially given the fact that given the information that was in there, leaves a big question in the on an annual basis about $23 million worth of recoverables in the marketplace today. And we're talking about a 10-year contract. So we're talking over $200 million of potential revenue that is not addressed in any aspect of these proposals. I would appreciate that being included.
Mike, just for public information wise, the $23 million figure in your email does have an error on the valuation of some of the commodities. It's off by about $20 million. So it's not quite that big a number. So I don't want everybody thinking that the $23 million number is a correct number necessarily.
Those valuations
a vetted number.
Okay, right. I quoted the source.
Tin doesn't sell for $17,000 a ton, or we'd all be loving it right now. So that was a big error there. So I think that your numbers should be vetted a little bit before we throw that out as a consideration. I agree that a financial model needs to be done, but that $23 million number is not vetted.
That's exactly what I was hoping to get, Derek. Where I'm wrong, show me where I'm wrong, but let's have a number to work with. Right now, we have no economic perspective on these choices.
Agreed.
Mike, I want to say I agree with you. I would like to see a financial model as well. I'm just throwing this out there. Is this something that maybe we want to create a subcommittee to put together, even just a thumbnail sketch, just to get us looking at, is this good, bad, or otherwise? I don't know what other people's thoughts are on this.
I feel like
I would say. Go ahead, Kim.
I feel like staff have done a pretty thorough evaluation of the benefits and risks. So that would be my only reservation with doing something like that.
Well, in the process, Kim, did you come across any monetary benefits to the county on those efforts? Because those numbers that were used were extracted from a report from February. From a Portland recyclable resource. I quoted the source, and it was in writing, and those are published numbers. So I think you're right. Maybe a subcommittee to address and dig down. That's information we can help at least verify.
What page are you referencing? Or what there's multiple documents and stuff.
Okay. What we did was we took the documents that you provided where it showed the annual tonnage per year broken out by type. And the type that you listed were aluminum, tin, cardboard, and the various plastics. As it so happens, the Portland Recyclable publication published the value per ton. Actually, and when you get into the plastics, it actually was, they actually priced it out in cents per pound. So I extrapolated it to a tonnage rate, so the chart would be apples to apples. But the but it's a question, and Waste Connections and Derek, maybe you could answer this. There were I also quoted that the industry is looking to invest in extracting even more plastics. So we're in a time where all this is evolving. There was a big article in the paper about manufacturers coming into Washington State, but nobody's talking about the life cycle of these things. And they're going to eventually end up dealing with solid waste issues. So, and there are companies already, there's at least four up in Seattle that are going businesses on extracting the out of recycled batteries. My point is not to get into the mud of the individual item, but we're dealing in an area that has an economic value that we have no appreciation for specific to Clark County. And so the advisory council is not only supposed to be looking for technical advances to discuss and introduce to the local community, but I think we have a fiscal responsibility to understand the dynamics. Waste Connections has a right to earn a profit. But what percent of the recyclables should we be getting back?
Yeah, Mike, I'd say a couple things on that. One is that, so your model, I appreciate the information that's in there. And we do report tonnages, valuations of the material to the county on a quarterly basis. And, you know, we can, I think maybe some sort of subcommittee might be appropriate to review that information if you want to know more about it. But your model doesn't consider the fact that it costs somewhere between $110 and $120 per ton to process the material. So while it may have a valuation, it doesn't have a $23 million valuation. Let's call it about a $3 million valuation. It costs us probably twice that to process. So recyclables are at a loss currently. So there's not really a windfall or additional monies being earned by Waste Connections on recycling. There's a tip fee involved to get us back to whole, but it's a pretty complicated process. And I mean, we can get pretty easily into the weeds on it. So I don't know how far we want to go on it. The other thing I would note is that this plan, and yeah, maybe it's Mike is the best one to talk to it, and the Solid Waste District does not conceive of the county owning a materials recovery facility moving forward. It's for the transfer stations and for the management of garbage.
I can tell you to back up with some of this run and murph from multiple companies and multiple things. They are not profitable, especially in today's environment. They lose money very consistently. If you are breaking a profit, most of the big players in that area are businesses or multi-billion dollar businesses that are using that commodity as something else for their business. Like in WestRock's case, it's an integrated system where they're taking the paper and moving on to paper mill, which moves on to a corrugated box plant. That's how they make the money off it. They're not making money on the recycling. And the market has been so volatile for probably the last 10 years that has ebbed and flowed somewhat, but it's not a very profitable business.
So can I weigh in here a little bit, Mike? You're bringing up some great points. The financial considerations and coordinate and how much control you have over those financial decisions is an important element of the ownership and operation. And in my professional opinion, I've worked under and worked with jurisdictions under all of these institutional, and they all can work great under the right arrangements. And certainly one of the goals of any system is to take advantage of the professional experience that's out there. Specifically talking to the Clark County system and our regional assessment, the facilities operated by CRC, they've done a great job. There's no question. You can read the regional study that we did, the assessment of the reports. But at the same time, we're looking at those facilities were built 30 years ago. And there needs to be considerable investments made in those. So the question then comes down, how do you control the schedule, the decisions to make in those investments, and coming to the issue that you talked about, what risk does the county want to do and say either delegate to saying we want to try to recover these materials because we think it's good for the system and we want to offer that service. Now, if to use this example and Derek and the point brought up by Gabe was right, I've built several MRFs, and several years ago the finances were great, were much better, but the commodity prices today aren't. So why do people keep doing recycling? Well, it's because it's either a legal or regulatory responsibility, but it really comes back down to the local jurisdiction wanting to decide on what's more important, spending more money or recycling that. And that's where you get into the ownership question. The private guys are not going to invest money to lose money. And they shouldn't. Recycling a commodity that has no market because the local community wants to do it. You just look at glass. Glass doesn't make any money. It costs a lot of money, but guess what? There's a lot of credit and you can't get rid of it. But nonetheless, communities have made a decision glass is going to be recycled, so they keep it. So those are the kind of decisions that face you as you move forward with the system. And the question in the ownership is, what level of control do you want in it? Do you want to own it and delegate that, or do you want to try to delegate it through an ownership operation contract? So that's the issues I think you need to do. Now, with regard to providing more financial information, there is financial analysis of the current system, and perhaps we should talk about how we present that to you, and I'll yield to Mike and Joel to talk about that. But I hope what I came back and said helped you kind of frame this and frame some of the issues you raised, because they were good.
Just as a quick antidote, just like City of Tacoma, the way they structured it is they ended up having these two positions they recruited for 2 years ago. It took them a year to fill the two positions, and they both turned over within the first year because they couldn't compete with private industry. And so they've had two critical solid waste positions in effect vacant for almost a two-year period of time. And that's why I say Waste Connections, the experience and the network that they've got, I'm a big fan. But I also, when you look nationally and explore the technology that's being applied to recover mixed waste for other uses, there is some revenue there that maybe, and I'm not an expert. All I'm saying is, in order to make a decision like this significant for the next 10 and with the option for a five-year extension, the next 15 years, it is an operational decision, but it also is a revenue decision.
Well, you should look at it, it's going to impact. I'm a ratepayer here in Clark County, and so you should look at it that it's going to impact the ratepayers. I don't care if the private sector is doing it all or the public sector, the ratepayers are going to pay for it. So it's how do you manage that decision process? And again, I'm not advocating for one. You keep bringing up the City of Tacoma, and I'm very familiar with them. I'm actually doing an update of their solid waste system right now. We just got selected. But there are several examples. I mean, they're an example where they own and operate everything. That is, you know, they've owned and operated their utility for many, many, many years. There are other places that they don't, like, and Clark County's one. They don't have they don't have a utility operation group. So you're absolutely right. That would have to get hired and built up. But nonetheless, our only point is look at all those options and consider what works best for you.
Exactly. I agree.
All right. So we had a lot of good discussion on that, bringing it back here. I know this was just informational, but definitely appreciate the information provided and the discussion as well. If there is a desire to form a subcommittee with that, I can get with Joe in the county and see about the process in creating that. I know there's some specific processes within our bylaws, which I know we will be reviewing to do that. I'm not as familiar as I should be within that, but I know there are some steps to take, but it's definitely something we could pursue if there is some interest within that. Moving on to other business.
Could I chime in here real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
So from a planning and policy perspective, what the goal here is to answer two questions. And this is what I want you to think about as we move forward in discussing this is, one, should we pursue public ownership once we have that option available to us in 5 to 10 years? And two, should we pursue the Jameis model as the organizational structure? Both of these options will require additional study. So this is just what we're looking for here is a recommendation to continue on with the evaluation of the ownership option as well as the ownership structure. So from the plan, which we need to keep moving on here, that is the question that we need to resolve and make recommendations on. It's very straightforward and very high level. So that's where we're at with it.
Right. Thanks, Mike. All right, moving on to other business.
Did you need an answer from us today on this? Or was that in reference to SWAC or in reference to something else?
Kim?
On this technical, see, you were just providing an update. You weren't
correct. Asking. We wanted to make sure everybody, okay. We encourage you to go through this if you haven't already. Look at the chapter from the regional system study, task 7 is what it's actually called, but and as well as the technical memorandum, because we need to soon answer this question.
Okay. I read through them and I think they're very well put together. Definitely supportive of the recommendations.
All right. Any other questions or comments? Anything for other business?
Is Jessica still around?
What was that?
Yeah, Jessica. I was just wondering if there was a battery recycling bill update.
Sure. Yeah, it actually passed the House a couple hours ago. There's still a few more steps left after that. I think the Senate has to review the changes that they made and then pass that and then, of course, go through the governor's office. So it's looking promising. I have the same emoji in my head.
Along that line, I would like the approval to accept to be put into the SWAC records the midterm report of the Washington State University team on lithium battery recycle recovery. They've come up with some amazing technological approaches, and they're going to be coming up with a final report probably just before our next meeting. But for the sake of their effort, would just like it approved to be put in to the Clark County SWAC records, and I would send forward the copy to Amber.
That's a technical process. Joel or Amber, can you jump in to see if that's appropriate or what we need to do with that.
I've never come across that. I don't know at this point.
I tell you what, I'll forward it to you. You can take a look at it, see if it's something to be appropriate. It's only meant as a recognition to the students for the effort that they did by putting it into our records. That's all. Because they're really doing it in behalf of Clark County.
Yeah, feel free to send it to me, and I'll look into it and see whether or not it's appropriate. But in the very least, I can look it over.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Jason, all right. We're still on other business?
Yep.
Okay. I wanted to bring to bring to your attention. God, words, they're hard tonight. Okay. So I belong to a handful of community groups, one of which is following a proposed concrete batch plant. Knife River is proposing a concrete batch plant that would go in on Northeast 72nd Avenue and 101st Street. It's, let's just say, north of Costco, if you guys know where that's at. Handful of community groups have been against it for one reason or another. I guess Knife River has now put it on hold. The reason I even bring it up, folks, is because I know that we did quite a bit of talking with or quite a bit of work with the city of Battleground about a dewatering facility for, what was it, road sweepings and clean out, you know, roadside clean outs and stuff like that. Potential concrete batch plant is going to have something similar to that. I only say that because they're going to be creating dust and then abating the dust with water. And then, of course, now you have mud and, runoff. You know, we're not talking just regular mud either. This is going to be, calcium-based, you know, lime-based, something like that. Guys, I apologize. I don't even know if that's something that pertains to SWAC, but I just wanted to kind of put it on everybody's radar that if Knife River comes back, they've mentioned either trying to find other facilities for this, other sites for this facility, or they're going to just simply do a one-year hold on the application process for this concrete batch plant. But I want to make sure that, SWAC, you know, if it pertains to what we do, that we are involved in this when it does come down the pipe. So nothing more than that. I just really wanted to bring it to everybody's attention, if you will.
Thanks, Joe. Anything else? All right, I'm going to open up to public comments. I'm not sure if we have any public here. Three, two, one. All right. No public comments. That wraps up this meeting. So our next meeting will be May 4th. The following special meeting will be June 1st. And I hope we will be off the special meetings at that point and back to our quarterly meetings. Fingers crossed. So I guess just need a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. I think I did that right. Great meeting, guys. Covered a lot of information and so forth. So enjoy your evening.